Thank you very much for sharing your memories and stories of Ely Pits and Meadows. Could you tell me your name, please, and when and where you were born?
I'm Frances Mary Howell, known as Mary, and I was born in Liverpool, would you believe, in Bootle, which is the rough end, but anyway. But I changed my circumstances and came to Ely in 1948. So it was in 1949 I started work with the Great Ouse Catchment Board. That was then.
Okay. Can you tell us briefly what your association with this area is then?
Well, the association with the area is because I married my husband and he was born and bred in Ely. And he was a little choir boy. He was a choir boy in the cathedral in 1931. So he was very much attached to Ely. And he didn't want to leave Ely after the war. We met during the war, so he didn't want to stay in Liverpool. So he brought me down here. I came down in 1948. I've been here ever since, so I'm nearly local, you know. Yes, well, as I say, I came to Ely in 1948, and in 1949 we got a council house up St John's Road, and of course we were wanting all the cash we could to furnish the place, so I decided I'd go out to work, and I didn't quite know how to go about it, so I went to the Labour Exchange, and they sent me to the catchment board, and the office manager was Mr. Watson. I don't know if you remember Mr. Watson, but he was a Yorkshireman, and because he was Yorkshire and I was Lancashire, I was well in, you know, and I got the job. And that was at the beginning, and that was when it was the catchment board, the little office. So I started in the summer 1949. And what they were doing then, the important thing, of course, then was they were clearing up after the 1947 floods. Because all the riverbanks, you know, Erith burst and all the riverbanks were in a bad state. And so they had started to dig out the second pit, the pit here. I remember that because we had a very bad accident on that when they were digging out the pits. We had a very nice young man. He was just come out of the Navy and we called him Sailor Rowell. He had red hair and his dragline toppled over and he was killed. So that was a bit of a setback. It was one of the things I very much remember, though. But when I started work, the district engineer was Bud Abbott. His name wasn't Bud, it was something else, but we called him Bud Abbott. And he had a great big dog called Panda. And that used to sit on the seat beside him. And Mr. Abbott, when he interviewed me for the job, he said, "Well, I hope you'll stay here for more than 12 months," he said, "because most of the girls coming from just after the war, they'd sort of worked for him and then got pregnant and left." And I said, "Oh, no, I don't intend to do that. You know, I'm here for a good while." And I actually left in 1950. And our John was born in 1951. So I did the same as all the others. And I thought, really, that would be the end of Anglian Water. But by that time, yes, Bud Abbott, he went abroad. He went to South Africa. Because I had to ring up to the dog food place that made the Borneos to see how he had to treat Panda when he got to South Africa, you know, all that sort of thing. But the thing was that when he went, everybody thought that Mr. Bill Chapman would get the job because he was the deputy engineer. And it was sort of a foregone conclusion. But John Chapman, who was fresh out of the Royal Engineers, fairly, and had very good qualifications as an engineer, came to me one day, Mary, and said, "Can you keep a secret?" So I said, "I think so." So he said, "Well," he said, "I'm going to apply for the top job," he said. He had to tell me because I had to type the letters for him. And he said, "But keep it under your hat," he said, "because it's not what everybody expects." And long and short of it was, he got the job. But he never came to live in this house, this engineer's house, because he'd just built himself a nice new house in Linton Close. Yeah. So he didn't want to live on the job. So Bill lived here. And, of course, everybody thought Bill was the engineer, but actually it was John. And he was lovely to work for. But I'll tell you a story about the two of them. Bill Chapman and John Chapman, they were both commodores of the sailing club, and very much into the sailing club. And it came to pass that the sailing club would like the, because the other pit, the big pit, had islands in it. Everywhere you could go fishing off these islands. Our John had a punt and we used to go fishing, but the sailing club didn't like them, so in the interests of drainage the islands were removed. so that did alter the situation here. All the little islands that were in the big pit were removed to make it safer. So that was the two Mr. Chapmans.
Can you remember? Can you describe what you saw out the window?
Lots of drag lines.
Lots of
drag lines were there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And we got all the tipper lorries here that were bringing the pit there, because that was part of my job. I don't know if I get this right. I think there was a team of about, there must have been a fleet of about a dozen tipper lorries coming from there with gold, all going onto all the riverbanks that had been damaged. And I had to find out how much clay they'd taken from the pit, and then I had to multiply that. Well, that was the tear, wasn't it? And I had to multiply that by a figure, which I can't remember. And that gave us how much clay was going to be put in the... It was consolidated then, you understand. And that was part of my job, doing that, seeing how much clay they took out of the pits. And there was all these tipper lorries. They didn't go much on... Some of them went on barges, but, of course, you couldn't get to all the places they wanted to be, not with barges. So, and there was a funny story about the barges, because... But this was when I came back after the... Because I left in 1950, and in 1961, John Chapman came to my house and asked me... He'd lost his secretary, the one that had been... Because he got the job and had the secretary, but she'd left him. And he came to see me if I'd go back and be his secretary. So I went back in 1961 to work for him again. By that time, it was the Great Ouse River Authority. We changed from the catchment board. And talking about the barges, that we had this tug driver called Snowy Angel. His wife and child still live in Ely. And he was a funny man. Nobody wanted to work with him. He was an awkward one. But he was a very good workman. And he was the tug driver. And he came to my little office there. I had one of those windows that go up, He came to the office window and he said, "I want to see Mr. Chapman." I said, "Well, which Mr. Chapman do you want to see?" Because I'd always got to ask. So he said, "Well, I don't know, really." He said, "I've got a bit of trouble with my barges." So I said, "Well, what sort of trouble have you got with your barges?" He said, "I've just sunk eight of them." And the thing is, some of those barges are still in there, because they never got all of them out, I don't think.
Do you know where they
are? Yes, in between where the river comes into the pit. That's where they went. I had to put little green flags on them when they were working to try and salvage them. But that was poor Snowy. He said, "I'm having a bit of trouble with my barges." I said, "Well, what sort of trouble can you have with barges?" He said, "I've just sunk eight of them." The thing is, if one of them sinks, they all go. He must have overloaded one. So that was the trouble with the barges. But I don't know whether that wasn't in the 1949 bit. That was when I'd gone back in 1961. Because the big thing then, apart from the... doing that pit, was the flood protection scheme that they started. I can't remember the name of the contractor they had. They dug out the channels, didn't they? I mean, you know this, the flood protection channel and the release channel, and they made a circle around all the rivers, didn't they? Flood protection, that was mostly what I was on when I worked there. It went on for a long time. No, it was finished by the time I left, I think, because I left in 1979 to go to the sewage division. The relief channel and the flood protection channel. I also worked at that time with Bill Summers on the, water quality control. There was Bill. But I didn't work for him as much as I did for John Chapman, but he was a lovely man, yes. Tell you what else happened while I was here. This was quite important at the time. We had a visit from the Oba of Benin, and he brought five wives with him, and he came and looked round all the work they were doing,
So who was he?
The Oba of Benin. It's a state in Africa. I don't know much about it, but he was somebody very important. He had a lot of people with him and five wives, and they were all dressed in saris. They were lovely.
Do you know why he came to have a look?
Well, it was all to do with drainage problems, right. You see. He was seeing how we went on here. But I think he had some engineers with him. But that was, I often, now and again you hear Benin mentioned. It's in the middle of Africa somewhere. It's only a small principality, but the Oba came.
Would that be in the 60s sometime?
That would be, yes, because it was 60s to 70s I worked there, yes. I can't tell you exactly when, I don't know. No, but he came. So that was, and anyway, I left, I left to join the sewage division in 1979. Well, what happened, I worked for John Chapman, as you know, and we got on very well. And he became ill and had to leave because he went on holiday to France and he lost his sight while he was there. He had a hemorrhage behind his eyes. And when he came back, he couldn't see very well. And he didn't want to give up his job, really. And so, I had to work quite hard with him, do things that I had never done before that were sort of his. But in the end, he did have to give up. And that was when Mr. Batchel came. So I was Mr. Because when John Chapman was here, because while John was here, they built Kingfisher House for the sewage division. And the girls in Kingfisher House were a grade up from me. They were grade two and I was only grade one. And I kept saying, I'm thinking of going to work at Kingfisher House because it'll be more money. And John Chapman would never let me. You know, he used to always persuade me not to.
But he didn't offer you more money?
Well, the funny thing was, as soon as I said I was going, they did. Yes. They gave me a little bit of a bonus as well because I remember I bought my cooker with it. And anyway, I went to... I wasn't sort of wanting a job, really, because I'd got the job here. I hadn't given it up or anything, but it was with Bill Batchel. And I thought, well, now's the time to make a move, now that the bosses were moving. And so I went for the interview for a job at Sewage Division in Kingfisher House. And I was interviewed by John Holding, who was the Divisional Operations Controller, and the Personnel Manager, that was Alec Gibbs, he still lives at Soham, and they interviewed me. And here again I struck lucky because John Holding, had done his chemistry training at St Helens Tech, where I'd gone to for all my secretarial training, you see, so we could talk about St Helens Tech. And so anyway, they said to me, I went sort of early in the afternoon, and they said, well, can you go and do some shopping or something? And if you come back late in the afternoon, when we've interviewed one or two other people, we'll let you know. So I walked away and I was thinking to myself, I wasn't really desperate for a job, you know, but I thought, oh, I would like to work with that man, because John Holding was lovely. And so he sat there with his pipe, you know, and I thought, yes, I would like to work with him. So I got the job. So I moved from here to the sewage division, and I brought this to show you. That was what they sent me with a present. I don't know what present was. All the people I'd worked with. But there's one or two other things I want to tell you about my time when I worked. I'll tell you what I think is the funniest one. The other thing, the serious bit though, is that while I was here, they were doing all the piling work between all through Ely, all the riverbank that was owned by that had to do with the district council was piled with the asbestos piles. I mean, they're still there, aren't they? Universal Asbestos Company used to come.
All along the river.
Yes, yeah. That's right. Yeah. And there were farmers either end that wanted theirs piling and thought that Anglian Water should have just gone ahead and done all that. But there was I don't know what the outcome of it, but it was Lees at that end and it was Percy Cole at that end. These farmers, they thought that they should have theirs done as well. I think they probably did have them done, but they perhaps had to contribute something towards them. I don't remember the outcome of it.
No.
But old Percy Cole was a funny old chap. He owned the land from sort of the cutter towards the railway station, all that land on the far side of the river. When it was springtime, the Cambridge rowing crew used to come and row down the river. And, of course, they used to come past Percy's land. And they always had a speedboat with them, a big speedboat with the cocks or whatever he was in it, and it annoyed Percy because he said the wash used to damage the river banks, you see, and he used to get very vexed about it. And one day he shouted to this cox as he was in this water and told him, you know, to clear off or something like that. And apparently what the cox did was that, you see, to him. So Percy came bouncing into the office very, very upset. And he said, you know, I want you to do something about this. So John Chapman said, well, after he'd gone, you know, I don't know what we can do, Mary, really, just stop them. They've always come up the river for their muck rowing. But he said, anyway, I'll write to head office and we'll just so that we know we've done something. So I had to write to head office about Percy Cole and his insult. And so John Chapman said, how can we put that in a letter? So we had a little think about it. And in the end, we said he gave him an inverted Churchillian gesture. One of the other things I wanted to tell you about what was going on while I was working in the little office was the arrangement we had with the ship at Brandon Creek. The manager of the ship at Brandon Creek in those days was a Mr. Blanchflower, and he and John Chapman had a sort of an understanding that when our people went out to cut all the grass on the riverbanks around Brandon Creek, they cut all the grass around the ship, that, you know, which was really Mr. Blanchflower's responsibility. So that was a nice little arrangement we had, so that we always went to the ship for Christmas dinner, you know, or any other dinner that was always at the ship at Brandon Creek. So that was just another thing that was there. She used to say, ring Mr. Blanchflower and tell him we're coming to cut his grass. And I've told you there was a tipper lorries. And well, here you said, how did it change and develop over the years? Well, I mean, the little office was sort of situated in just amid the fields. And there was a farmer along here at this side, Mr. Furness, and he used to own this land. And when I was in my little office there, sometimes I'd get a cow come and put its head through the window. And I used to have to ring Mr. Then that was dangerous because they were near the pits. And I used to have to ring Mr. Furness up, and he used to have to come and do a rodeo and round up his cows. I'll tell you a story about a fence, though. But it's just all pits there. And then the other side of the road were all our store sheds. There was grass seed and sleepers and all sorts of stock was stored across there. And I was supposed to keep the stock cards and keep the stock, and people had to come to me if they took anything, you know. And I was supposed to go and check the stock. Well, grass seed's full of mice. And I thought, I don't like this job much. So there were two lovely foremen at the time. And, well, there was Don and Doug, and they were both nice. So they used to do it for me. But one time, we lost a lot of sleepers, and they blamed me for that. But, I mean, if somebody came in the night and took sleepers away. But that was a... But about fences and things, this gate along here that we just come to off the common onto the... it was open, wasn't it, when I first came there? There was no gate at all. It was just an open road down, and the fishermen used to use it and park their cars and whatever. And the powers that be, and I don't know whether it was John Chapman, but I think it must have been. Or it might have been Bill that was sort of wanted to get it done. So they put a gate, a big gate across there, so that motor cars couldn't go down. And not without being able to, you know, having a lock and key to the gate. And all the fishermen around here, including my husband, were very vexed about it, you see. So we had a petition, and I was sort of on both sides for that. But I think it was Dudley Coleridge, he was a big fisherman, he found out that that was a public footpath. So in the end, I don't know how it is now with you, but there was the big gate across to stop vehicles, but they had to put a little gate that you could walk through to go fishing. Oh, and the other, talking about gates, that reminded me that we used to have trips out when it was the river section there. Every year, in the springtime, I suppose it would be, you'd know better than me, that they used to do echo sounding to see whether the rivers needed dredging. And John Chapman used to let us girls go out on the boats with the surveyors that were doing the echo sounding. There was a lovely big, what sort of boat was it? Not a houseboat, but that sort of boat came from Lynn to take them.
Like a cruiser?
A cruiser sort of boat, yes, it came from Lynn. And there was always the same driver on it. And he went to do the echo, and Ken Hitch used to be the one that did the echo sounding. Yes, it was Ken, there were others, but I remember Ken. And so we used to go on it, Priscilla and I, and there was a girl who worked for Bill Summers, Pam, she used to go sometimes. And each year we went on a different bit of, because John Chapman said it'd be good for us to see the rivers that we didn't know about. No. So each year we went on ones we hadn't been on before. And oh, when we used to go to Hockwall, that's a little ooze, isn't it? That was always full of weeds. Yes, that was always full of weeds. I remember going on that one. But we were always allowed to stop at a nice pub for our lunch. And we used to get these trips out. So that was just a little perk of the job when they were echo sounding. But the other trip I was going to tell you about was we had a trip in the... because we were very much in touch with Denver Sluice, because it wasn't automated then. We had Stan Mann and Vera lived in... They built a bungalow for them at Denver Sluice. And it's still there. I saw it not so long ago. Yes, we went round. And And then there was the office at Denver Sluice, had a big room at the top where you could take parties in, where Stan Mann used to talk to them. And we used to have office parties up there. It was good. And so we were always in touch with them. And one time we all went out there to see them install the big gate at Denver, you know, the very big one in the middle. I've got some pictures. I didn't bring them, though. I couldn't find them. They're of this gate being installed at Denver. So that, and then, but then soon after that, I think it became automated. Because there was a funny little, the lock key, Stan Mann was sort of the lock keeper, but there was a little man there with him who used to do all the hard work called Bertie Addison, and he lived in one of the cottages near Denver Sluice. And so that was, we were taken out, Priscilla was with me, and we were taken out to see the big gate installed. So that was that. The only other thing I remember that sort of has altered was that your house was built, this house was built, where it used to be just fields.
Do you remember it being built?
Yes, oh yes. Mm-hmm. That was early on. And then, of course, the houses on Trick River Road were built. But that was right towards the end of my career here. Just before I left, they'd started to build Mulberry Way, and right, that end,
yeah,
of them.
Yeah.
Yes. And, of course, they did away with the sluice keeper at Bottisham. Bottisham Lock was funny, the system they had there. They had Bertie Addison and his wife, and they used to look after the lock. They used to go out and move it when anybody came, you know. There was no automation at all. But they were a funny couple. I think they were from Lancashire. And when the men had to go out there to do anything at the lock, Glad, her name was, Bertie Addison's wife, Glad used to offer them a cup of tea, but they were always very wary because it always had goat's milk in it, because they kept goats. And they used to live upstairs in the summertime and downstairs in the wintertime. There was a sort of biggish house at Bottisham, don't know if it's still there, and they lived on a different floor in different seasons. But that was Glad and Bert. But of course, when automation came, they lost their jobs. No, that wasn't Bert Addison. Bert Addison was at Denver. That was Bernie Harding and Gladys. So that was... So I've gone through my notes now, that's all.
Can you remember anything about what this area looked like when you very first came?
Well, I mean, it was a very big change for me coming from the Liverpool area, although I didn't, at the end of the war, I didn't live right in Liverpool because we were bombed out. I lived in St Helens, where my father was brought up, and I worked at Pilkington's, the glass people, till I got married. And it was a big change coming from that sort of industrial area to Ely, because Ely was just a little market town. And the thing that struck me was that there was seemed to be nobody like me here. They were all families, and they were all either worked on the land, or there wasn't a sort of load of women who worked in offices and that. And it wasn't till I came and started to work here that I began to feel I was doing something. I felt, you know, I sort of came here and thought, whatever am I going to do, you know? You could get jobs in Cambridge, and because I was a comptometer operator in Liverpool, I did my training on the top floor of the Cunard building. Pilkington sent me there for this training, because comptometers were the very first, well, almost the first, calculating machines. And so I was sent there. That was quite an honour. So I thought, well, I'll get a good job when I get to Ely, you know, because I'm a comp operator. And I'd worked in an office where there were 32 comptometers. Came to Ely. There was one in Ely at the sugar beet factory, just one. So that went by the board, and I had to go back to my shorthand and dive in. Well, when I first came here, there was just a little tiny office going in that direction, like that, right there now. That was all there was. They built the other two bits on whilst I was there.
Ah.
The bit at this end was built for Bill Summers to do his water quality work in, and the other end was built as a drawing office. Harry Halls had that. And they were both added on round about the time I was here. I don't know if that was the 1949 or whether it was after 61. Well, I came on my bike, but there was always beet lorries going along. If I couldn't manage it, I used to get hold of the back of a beet lorry.
Can you remember, over the years, did you think the area around it changed very much in terms of, well, the looks of it?
From then till now?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, considerably. Yes, yeah. It's changed. Yeah, considerably. The whole atmosphere of the place has changed, hasn't it, really?
Yeah.
I mean, it used to be sort of, when you went up the market on the Thursday, you knew everybody.
Yes.
But it's not like that now, is it?
No. And in terms of the pits area, can you remember about how people use the area then as opposed to now, for example, for leisure?
Yes, well, I used to take my dog out. Well, when I worked here, I used to come on my bicycle and I used to scrap home at lunchtime on my bike because we had a big black Labrador. I think there's some pictures of him in there. And so I had to take him out. So I used to scrap home on my bike, have a yoghurt. That's all I ever had. And I used to bring him right down here to the pits and in my dinner hour. And he used to go in the pits and chase the ducks and things. Sometimes he'd catch a rabbit because the rabbits didn't burrow in those days. They'd all got myxomatosis, hadn't they? And so they didn't make burrows. They lived in the hedgerows. I used to bring him round here in mid dinner hour, then take him back home because he was fastened up in the kennel all day. You see, so he had to have a run at dinner time. And then I used to cycle back, and that kept me nice and slim. That did for a while.
So you brought him down Lover's Lane, did you?
Yes, right down. That's right. Yes, that was Lover's Lane. Yeah. Yeah. Mm, well, that used to have a dike either side of it. I don't know whether it still does, because he used to go in it and get all dirty. Yeah. And then you can get to the river, sort of, if you go off Lover's Lane, you can get to the river, can't you?
Yeah.
Because we used to go fishing down there, and our John had a punt on this. You know, Mr. Tyrrell said there used to be pleasure boats on this pit. I went to that meeting, and it was only because he'd said that I went to that meeting. I wasn't really unduly concerned about the pits, but because he said that, I thought, well, he's telling lies, because there never were pleasure boats on this pit.
No,
they weren't allowed. The only boats that came on were the tugs and the barges. But they let our John have his punt on there. He built a punt at home, and we put it on here. And I did go to the workshops then, because I got a nice anchor and one or two things from the workshop for John's punt. When you do it with a bottle? We did it with baby sham. Launched it on the pits down here. There was a part at the far side that we could wear it. And he had it. He used to go fishing on it. And now that was very early on, because that was when the islands in the other pit were still there, and we used to go from one island to another and fish. And that's why he wanted his punts. And so did the dog. The dog used to jump off and dog paddle alongside of us. It's not much, but I came up on my bicycle one day, and I was coming to the common, and I thought, whatever's on the common? There's a lot of cows. And when I got near to it, they weren't. They were skewbald horses. They were all put in, and it was the gypsies. They were going up to the horse fair somewhere in North. Oh, there was a horse fair, and they were taking them up there. And they were used to be allowed. Now this will help you, because they used to be allowed to stay on the common for a fortnight, and then they had to move on. So it's like, you know, travellers these days. They have all the trouble with. Well, they were travellers that travelled, but they were allowed to stay for a fortnight.